Will it call to order? Everybody take a look at the minutes from April. Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Public comment? Anybody? Okay. I have no comments. Presentations. We have Tatiana with Building Our Future.
And Lynn.
Yep. Lynn? Go ahead.
Oh, we're starting.
We're starting.
I thought you were running down the agenda, and then the next presentation will be the Life Course Initiative. All right. So good afternoon, everyone. I'm Tatiana Buchanan with Building Our Future, the Executive Director.
Sure, I'm Lynn DeBilker, and I'm the chair of 2H Programming at Building Our Future.
Yes. So thank you this afternoon for allowing us to present on your community partnership, Building Our Future. Cindy Johnson serves as one of our leadership table members with the partnership. And then obviously Dr. Diane Gerlach is on our Smart Beginnings Action Network that you'll learn more about in a couple of minutes. So Building Our Future, for those that are new to this partnership, we are Kenosha County's first collective impact partnership focusing on cradle to career outcomes, educational and workforce development. Our vision here, everyone achieving personal potential from cradle to career. Our mission is that together we will engage our community to provide an environment in which all contribute and excel. Our tagline that we use, community unites, students succeeds, and everyone prospers. That is our aim to align all sectors in Kenosha County so that we're moving the needle on these critical outcome areas that you'll learn more about. In a nutshell, we believe our product is alignment. So it's educate, align, and then build those relationships across the county. Our roadmap. So we are part of a partner organization called Strive Together, based in Cincinnati, Ohio. And so this framework has been in existence for 10 plus years. And we're the fourth county in Wisconsin to jump on board. So their Strive is operating in Racine. They're known as Higher Expectations for Racine County. In Milwaukee, Milwaukee Succeeds. And in Green Bay, Achieve Brown County. Kenosha gave us a name, Building Our Future. So we really represent our largest school districts for the state of Wisconsin. And so we follow this framework. Smart Beginnings, formerly known as Kindergarten Readiness, School Success, which looks at early grade reading proficiency rates by third grade and math proficiency rates by eighth grade, middle school, high school, graduation, post-secondary education, and career prep. When we had our summit back in August 2016 in Kenosha County at UW Parkside, Kenosha County said we need to add one more, and that's community engagement, the first one you see there. So we want to make sure that we're inclusive of all voices and really engaging our families and our students that utilize our programs and resources within this county. So as of last summer, we launched Community Engagement, Smart Beginnings, Earth to Five, and then we just held our second meeting with School Success Early Grade Reading. And that's where Lynn's going to dive in a little bit more.
Right, so we will look at Smart Beginnings and School Success here today. The reason why Smart Beginnings, which focuses on kindergarten readiness, is so important is kindergarten readiness is really linked to future academic achievement and life success. The indicators for kindergarten readiness, it's hard to measure across school districts, but you'll see in a little bit what we're doing there. But data really shows that kindergarten readiness ties to third grade reading and eighth grade math scores, which you'll hear in a little bit of why that's so important. So, there we are. Our initial focus this year is to work on the ASQ-3, which is the Ages and Stages questionnaire, and I'll explain what that is. And our goal is to increase the number of screenings done by ASQ3 by 75% in Kenosha County over last year. We really want to ensure that every child in Kenosha County has been screened. A little bit about the ASQ3, it's a strengths-based tool that screens for developmental delays at 21 different intervals between 1 month and 5.5 years. It takes 10 to 15 minutes for parents to complete and a few minutes for professionals to score. I actually just learned last week how to score it myself, so I'm really excited about that. It really teaches parents about child development and the strengths of their own children, and it focuses on 5 domains: communication, gross motor, fine motor, problem solving, and personal social. It highlights results that fall in a monitoring zone to really make sure that we're able to track children at risk for developmental delays. And it can be completed at home, in a waiting room, during a home visit, or as part of an in-person or phone interview. So the Smart Beginnings group decided to focus on this screening tool to really make sure that all children in Kenosha County are screened before they're entering kindergarten. The reason why we chose the ASQ3 is last year there were 467 ASQ3s completed and reported to the county that we know of. That is a little less than 4% of Kenosha's over 12,000 children, 0 to 5. With the screens that were done so far this year, 299, we have screened a little over 6%. So there's a big opportunity there to be having conversations with parents around child development and developmentally appropriate activities. So here's a glimpse at our progress so far this year. This has our numbers up through April. There were 467 ASQ3s done last year, 75% of above that. We would have been at 189 screens in April, and we were at 299, so we're about 58% of our goal, which we are really excited about.
And if you can't see the slides, the slides have been printed. There's a handout over there, too.
Okay.
Because I know I'm having a hard time.
Maybe one there.
There we go.
There you go.
There, thin lines on there. Another strategy of this network is supporting strong families by promoting the usage of the Know and Go app. This app was developed by the Kenosha Achievement Center, and it's really designed to bring together all resources and events for families with young children in the community. So it's still a very new app, and we're working through some feedback and kinks, but if you have young children, we really encourage you to download this and give it a try, because it lists a ton of different events within the community. We did bring Know and Go app business cards for you, and I can pass these around. I'll pass them right now. And we have more than that, so feel free to grab some. Please consider handing out Know and Go business app or business cards in your organizations or businesses. There are parents with young children everywhere. We also have flyers. And I apologize because we don't have many of these, but these flyers explain the ASQ3 and how families can do the ASQ3 at home. So feel free to take one, and if you're interested, I can always get you more. So The next part of our roadmap is the school success piece. Tatiana mentioned this includes both third grade reading and eighth grade math. So far, we've only started work in the third grade reading space. And I want to tell you a little bit about why we chose to focus on third grade reading. It's actually a very common outcome area to be focused on across the country because at third grade, children make the transition from learning to read to reading to learn. So if children are behind in third grade reading, they're much less likely to be able to catch up later in their academic careers. It's actually, third grade reading is one of the strongest predictors of later success in both school and life in general. And students who are reading below third grade are 4 times more likely to drop out of high school. So that means that that period before third grade is so important to get things right. And so there are huge employment, economic, and health impacts on our community. So let's look at our Kenosha County third grade reading levels. Over on the left, you can see that 45% of all of our students in Kenosha County are reading at grade level, which is a little bit above the state average, which is great. We then start to disaggregate that data to look at different populations of students and how they're faring. In the next section, you can see that our students who are economically disadvantaged are reading at a much lower level, 32%, than our students who are not economically disadvantaged. Those students, 63% of them, are proficient. When we break down these numbers by race, we really see some disparities and opportunities for growth. So 56% of our white students are reading at grade level, 13% of our black students are reading at grade level, and 27% of our Hispanic students. So it's one thing to look at the number of 45%, it's another thing when you start to look at the gaps in opportunity for our students. So we have launched this network. We actually just had our second meeting on Friday. It's really exciting work, and we have some momentum behind that. One of the strategies that is being focused on by this group is the expansion of the United Way Readers Are Leaders tutoring program. This program has been at McKinley Elementary the last 3 years and has had incredible success. There's actually an editorial in the Kenosha News on Sunday about this program, so take a look at that. And so we're supporting that program and expanding to Wilson, Brass, and Forest Park next year so that we can start to see some of these gaps close. So we're just beginning this work in this outcome area, but we know that alignment of programs is going to make a big difference for these students and for the future of Kenosha County. So some opportunities to get involved. If you're interested in any of the Smart Beginnings work that we mentioned, we have that network meeting the third Thursday of every month from 8 to 9:30. Our early grade reading, we're still working out a regular day and time, but if you're interested in that work, you can feel free to contact me and I will have business cards too that I can leave. Our website has a wealth of data that is really easy to maneuver around and easy to filter, so check that out for county economic and education data. And think about becoming a reading tutor. It requires 30 minutes a week, and we're looking for over 300 tutors for next year. So whether that's you or your getting your organization on board to have a tutoring team, we'd really be excited about you jumping on board. So any questions? I don't know if I have time for questions, but any questions about our work?
What's the cutoff? How are you determining economically disadvantaged? Is it poverty line? Is it
question over.
So that's federally determined. It's the free and reduced lunch percentage. There, it's just a new way to say it.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
I guess then we have a question for you all. How do you see this intersecting with your work as the County Board of Health or in your own line of work? If we have time for discussion, Dr. Gerlach.
I'm the Board of Directors of the Shalom Center, and I also work there part-time. I'm on the inside of the program, but the family side of the program could really use this. From what I see on the family side, the economically disadvantaged are at a very lower rating level than what comes in. I know our caseworkers do intake work. I will give them this information and see what they can use it for intaking the youth.
Mm-hmm.
And we certainly could do the program at Shalom in a classroom that day. So, yeah, I really do see it, the economically disadvantaged, at a lower level.
Great, thank you. Yeah, I'd love to connect more about that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know Shalom came up in our second early grade reading meeting about
mm-hmm.
being an important partner.
I'm on our program committee, and we meet Thursday, so I'll discuss it then.
Great.
And out the information.
Thank do you,
you
think they would be able to do some of the developmental training?
Mm-hmm. I believe so. Mm-hmm. We do have an after-school program right now. It's Carthage College students that come in, and I think that's probably one of the most important part of the kids' day, because they're in this class from 3:30, and they even eat their evening meal in there. They bring it in there, so they're interacting with Carthage students that are interested in education and helping them while they, you know, do homework and other activities, and really it's teaching them some social skills too when they're eating, you know, how they. I'll react, please, thank you, stuff like that. That the people that are grow up in the circle of poverty, it's hard for them to get out. You know, so the early childhood development is extremely important.
Yeah, to do that screening.
That breakthrough free program is. Yeah.
Pam or Jody does most of the training for the ASQs, and
no
problem. She could probably give. Get over there to do a training.
It's yep. worth mentioning too, last week Jody Rizzitano, the health department here at the job center, hosted a training and 13 new childcare centers were trained with ASQ. So that is definitely
great.
Our North Star with Smart Beginnings with this work, that we're really supporting our childcare centers. We have over 100 childcare centers in this county that will continue to grow. And the state has a system called
Young Star.
And so we average around 2 point some percentage wise, and you know, we want more of our child care centers at a 5-star rating, and the more we can support them and the families understand what our age appropriate activities, so it'd be great to do it at the Shalom Center.
Certainly would.
Mark, please take some of the Know and Go apps too, because that you can have throughout the center and they can download that for family.
Tamara Coleman is our program director. So Tamara Coleman,
and Tamara's
former school board
yep.
president.
She's on her leadership table too,
okay.
So she's very aware of building her future. I would expect her to give the presentation at your meeting of what we're about.
Okay. You know, it might be on the agenda this week. I haven't seen
okay.
it yet, but
all right.
I'll definitely bring it up.
Yes. All right.
So part of the other, we started this, especially the ASQs, before even Smart Beginnings and
yeah.
that came into being. And part of our reasoning was, if you get the families educated about proper development, if you get the child care workers, the teachers, everybody else involved and knowledgeable about proper development, then they respond to the kids differently and they can help them better, instead of these kids that are 3 and 4 years old and they're getting kicked out of daycares because nobody knows how to deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
And that just sets the people in poverty back even farther, because now they're missing work and they're losing jobs.
And that number on the on one of the screens where it said 7%. So in Kenosha County, we have over 12,000 from birth to five. But that's just being reported to the health department. So there's a lot more children that are being screened with ASQ, which is great. We're just not aware of that and that score. So that's part of that alignment, too, if we can get our systems to work more effectively, too, so that we can really understand what our greatest needs are for Kenosha County, our little ones.
Through the health department, we have the enterprise system,
right,
which is the recording system. My office is entering them in. The child care centers are starting to enter them in. Home visitors. And we're trying to get some of the other medical providers to be entering the screens that they're doing. We've gotten, I think, most of the healthcare providers or are getting them on board with at least doing the screening.
Where are they entering it?
There's a system called Enterprise. It's an internet-based system. And so we can enter our scores into it, and then that can be seen by like the Kenosha Achievement Center, that they can keep track of the patients that they have. It's a good way for us to track where we're at in the community, how many have been screened, what our rate of delays are, and that will help us to know that, like, when we started doing this, the number of referrals to the Kenosha Achievement Center doubled.
Yeah, they with this laser focus that we've had with Smart Beginnings, birth to three KC, it's like an additional 40 plus more referrals per month. So they thought they were already doing good work, which I think is a good problem to have.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I know we screen all our foster kids, but I don't know if it's actually getting put in somewhere. So if it is, then we should be.
We can get you trained and get you putting them in, because that's another, it's great for the state to be able to track that too.
Right.
And in the future, we want to try to get a bi-directional so that we can be looking at it. The goal is to have, say, the medical providers are doing it at the 9, 18, 24 to 30, which is recommended by the AAP, and then other places like child care centers are doing it the in-between stages so that everybody's following that child along.
I'm going to have our care for kids coordinator contact you then.
Great, perfect.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
I'll leave you my business card.
Yeah. Yes.
So since we're doing home visiting, since we are entering them into the enterprise, then they are going to be counted towards these numbers?
Yes.
They
yes.
are already yeah. counted towards these numbers.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, because Jody actually, she's the coordinator for the county for the enterprise system. So when you enter it, she would be able to see it and help to refer it out to other individuals. So.
And with the enterprise, you can enter them, parents can enter them from home, and then Jody will give them a call and let them talk over the results.
Yeah, they'll receive three types of letters from the health department. At cutoff, they're doing well. But Lorena's leaving, so we'll figure it out.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. We'll figure it out pretty soon.
Yeah.
It's interesting, too. I spend about 2 hours a week at the training playground as a just a supervisor there, and they've got the book library there where
yes.
you can buy, you know, get a book and take a book. And there was two schools there last week, and this girl was up. She was at the book thing, and she was looking, and she had a book in her hand. So I walked over. I said, you know, you can take that book. She goes, but I don't think I can bring it back, and I really, really like this book. I said, no, you can take it. You don't have to bring it back. She says, thank you. This will be the third book in my house.
Wow.
So I'm like, you know, that really, you know, stuff you don't think about,
right.
you know, when you grow up with books in your house, and you got these kids that don't, and they really want them. So that was just an interesting little story there. That if you can get them reading young, I think they're better off.
One other quick thing I'll share, and these are, there's a lot of great programs and resources that exist in this community. It's just really aligning that so that the end user, the student, or that family, you know, is benefiting from it. And so one of the strategies that Lynn alluded to during the early grade reading is that United Way with KUSD will expand the Readers of Leaders tutoring program. And another strategy that United Way of Kenosha County is looking at is Imagination Library. So our counterparts in Racine County have the program Imagination Library. And so families from 1 month until 5 years old can receive a book every month at that home to start building that library in the home for free on the parents, and age-appropriate too books. And that's another way to start that early grade reading, because education, as all of you know, starts at birth. And that's another strategy that United Way is looking at right now. And Tammy Conforti is on our Smart Beginnings Action Network. In fact, Lynn will be going to the playground right after this meeting.
For the playground.
So it's great to hear, and thanks for sharing.
Yes.
So, any other questions, comments for these two? Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, so K-Life, Pam, please.
I'm here.
There's your magic wand.
Oh, yeah. Magic wand. Thank you. So, Kenosha Life Course Initiative for Healthy Families, also known as LIFE, K-Life, K for Kenosha. It's been around since 2010. I've been here in years before. We are now in the final year of our five-year grant. We have about 9 months left after this month, July 1 through March 31st. Of next year, and then am I supposed to be pointing at some
button? Yeah, it's opposite.
It says that.
There we go.
Okay, opposite. Okay. And there's the expectation that the Wisconsin Partnership Program, who is the funder, will have another five-year funding cycle. They are currently evaluating all of their grants. And the Kenosha Life Collaborative, as we know it today, I don't believe will be the next iteration. We'll have a focus on health equity and social determinants of health. And we're not quite sure yet what those requests for proposals will look like, but surely broader to encompass additional factors and issues of infant mortality, rather than the kind of laser or zero focus that the LIFE initiative has had for the past 10 years. So for the next fifth year, our last year, we'll continue to do the work of our approved work plan, which is to strengthen partnerships and engagements of community partners that sit around the table. We have some key partners that have been there since the beginning, as well as HMO, Community Health Center, the, of course, Division of Health as the convening agency, the Racine Kenosha Community Action Agency, WIC program, and PSN are our kind of cornerstone partners and programs, along with the home visiting programs. So our priority in this last year, we selected a couple of years ago to look at, as I've mentioned here before, postpartum depression and maternal mental health, and primarily to increase the number of screenings. So in addition to screening for kindergarten readiness, we're hoping to screen more pregnant and postpartum moms for depression and baby blues and stress and anxiety and all those factors that impact the health of the baby. We are part of the regional LIFE organization. That LIFE is funded in three communities, as you may remember, Milwaukee, Racine, and Kenosha, and there's a regional effort to conduct and create stigma reduction campaign. We are just in the throes of that for this fifth year, and there will be some coordinated campaign strategies using multimedia strategies, again, for lack of a better word, including some billboards and public service announcements and print materials that will address the reduction of stigma, which is as we all know, a hindrance to individuals and families receiving mental health treatment. So we will continue that work as well. Just a couple of highlights on our primary successes here. The goal of that whole postpartum depression and maternal mental health effort is to identify our priority population, as you know, as part of the LIFE grant, that the that African American women and families in particular have greater disparities among those who have access and engage in treatment and screenings. And then we also want to refer those who are screened and show indication of a need to treatment providers and coordinate those resources. You'll hear more in the next presentation from our home visiting programs, but primarily in our system now, in the local system, and Gwen and others can speak to this. Prior to home visiting, there was very little coordinated effort around postpartum depression and maternal mental health screening. Now the Edinburgh, the postnatal depression scale, PHQ-9, and I won't go into all of this because the home visiting team is much more capable of speaking to this, but this, they are very active part of our collaborative and primarily represent the majority of the screenings that we get referred from the WIC program. And then there's PSN, Prevention Services Network, who also receives screenings from DCFS, as well as the community and schools, and then walk-ins. So between those two, in terms of connecting women with referrals to treatment for depression and mental health services, those are the primary points of contact and points of entry. Our effort next year is to, as we've just recently participated in a training around this, is to look at OBs and see what the current status of screenings are and with some of our HMO plans. We have many, maybe 5 to 7 HMO partners around the table as well who have members in the community that also access services for depression screening. Then lastly, we've had a lot of success with our fatherhood initiative. Many of you may have read about Charmaine. He continues to be acknowledged in the community for his leadership around involving dads, and as well as the maternal child health efforts. So MCH, maternal child health, there's an interesting article that was released a few years ago that says, where's the F in maternal child health? F as in fathers, for those of you with wandering minds. And so the Fatherhood Initiative continues, started out as a LIFE grant, a pilot demonstration grant, is now fully funded as a full-time initiative in the WIC office. And generating success throughout the state with other WIC programs looking to involve dads in this whole process of health of women, moms, and children. So I will make that short and sweet for you and take any questions if you have them.
Any chance of a grant extension or another grant, do you believe?
We're hopeful. I might also mention I am 3 weeks from retirement and brought Atifa with me, who will be my successor and be working closely with Gwen and Cindy and Leanne Black, who couldn't be here today. I will stay positive and believe that there's definitely, as you know, the Wisconsin partnership was a huge a Blue Cross Blue Shield conversion funds, and those dollars are still available. We are very hopeful that there will be additional 5-year grants funding. I do think that the focus will change and be broader, which I think is a good thing, to look at health equity and social determinants of health, as well as some of the medical indicators of infant mortality and all those ills that affect it. So yes.
We've built a lot of evidence-based facts that are...
Yeah, between the three communities, I think between Racine, Kenosha, and Milwaukee, there has been strong evidence developed over the last 10 years since this was funded around what we know that works, you know, from breastfeeding and birth spacing and, you know, housing and employment and all the other social factors that impact health. And Gwen, you want to add anything? Anybody else? So yes, we're hopeful that the funding will continue. I'll pass that down to the president, please. Thank you.
Okay, so I am Laura Peters, and this is Brad Smith, and we're going to talk about the Kenosha County Comprehensive Home Visitation Teams.
We were trying to shorten ours. I think ours is a little bit lengthy. Yeah, go ahead. Let's do the reading and I'll just breeze over that. So we have 10 nurses, 15 leaders, two admin assists, and then a mental health coordinator comprises the staffing for our teams. And our goals are healthy mom, healthy babe. A lot of the same things everybody else has been talking about, the adequate birth space and meanwhile normal child development, and of course eventual self-sufficiency for these families. Lots of referral sources. We're always looking for more. Our primary referral source is WIC, and we've been spending a lot of time at the WIC office interacting with the moms and trying to get them connected, if not to us, then to somebody else. We don't just, you know, gosh, we're not interested, we'll see you later. We try to hand out other resources if they don't want to engage in services. Our initial outreach consists of face-to-face if we can. Otherwise, it's phone calls followed up by texts and letters. That piece gets difficult because they don't really know why we're contacting them. So it's much better if we can meet them one-on-one or get a warm referral from somebody, maybe a physician's office or the hospital, where we can actually, you know, they know the client and they can introduce us to the client through that way. Our services are voluntary. Visits typically happen twice a month. Typically they're an hour to hour and a half in length, usually in the client's home, but they can be anywhere the client chooses. During those visits, lots of stuff happens. Education, we provide resources, certainly we are support for them, and then lots of them are in crisis, and we help them navigate that as well. There are two evidence-based home visitation models. We have the parents as teachers model and the nurse-family partnership. Nurses staff both of them. Though the curriculum differs some, we do a lot of the same stuff. So parents as teachers, basically, I've got a lot of words up there, but we can take just about anybody, whether they're pregnant or newly delivered. Because we also have NFP, we try to take the moms that are more than 29 weeks pregnant with their first baby, or kind of have timed out of their program, or maybe they're newly delivered. So it gives us some more options for those moms that kind of fall outside of the NFP guidelines. Moms do need to be low income. It is, again, a voluntary program, and we will stay with the babies until they are three. That's your trick.
Okay, so NFP is very similar to PAT. NFP first began, it was just mothers who were 29 weeks pregnant. We are now also doing a pilot program for the next 3 years, and we are able to allow multi-parent moms into our program during any time during their pregnancy. NFP wants to do this pilot for 3 years to make sure that we are still meeting the same outcomes as the first-time moms. So if we are, then hopefully then they'll be able to extend this to more sites, not just the pilot sites. And we also work with the moms until the babies are 2 years old. We have a wide range of educational topics, so it depends on both curriculums guide the topics, and also the clients are able to choose what they would like to talk about. And here's a list of some of the things we talk about. Here are some of the screening tools that we do. As mentioned before, the ASQ, we do the ASQ often in the home, and this is on the child to make sure the child's meeting their age-appropriate developmental milestones. We also do the EPDS, the anxiety screening, perceived stress scale, and adverse childhood experiences on mom to see if there are any interventions we need to do or any referrals that we need to make out in the community. Oops, I'm sorry, I skipped. I'm not very good at this pointer here. Okay, this is the one I want to be on. The mental health coordinator, as Pam kind of already mentioned, she helps with home visitors. She meets every new client that we have just as like a community resource navigator to hopefully introduce, once we introduce Monica to them, hopefully they'll be more apt to, if they do need mental health services, they'll be more apt and kind of shy away from that stigma of getting in mental health resources. She also helps with every other different resources in the community, from housing to clothing to everything here pretty much. As Lori kind of mentioned, our community partners are kind of the same thing as some of our resources and referrals where we get from, again, like the Kenosha Life Force Initiative is on here, and WIC, and as she alluded to before, we are always looking to outreach to new partners in the community. Our current CQI is on safe sleep. We are working to ensure community partners are trained in best safe sleep practices. We have cross-trained with the WIC staff, additional health department staff, daycare providers, and we have presented safe sleep education at 2 resource fairs so far. Lori and I also attended the FEMA team meeting in May, and we plan to continue attending those.
So just so you get an idea of the size of the programs, we currently have 42 active adult clients in the PAT program, and over the course of the last year, we had 751 visits just with the PAT clients.
Are most of them staying in the program up until age 3?
No.
First year?
Probably the first 6 months, and then they get jobs, and it's hard. It gets harder and harder for them to continue. But we did, PAT just hit their 3-year mark in February, and we've had 8 graduates since then. So it's pretty good, I think.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's hard. These moms need to get back to work, and they work odd hours. Maybe they're working for shifts, they're sleeping during the day,
yep.
And so it's sometimes difficult for them. Pregnancy outcomes that we're actively following, our tracking that we do in PAT is not as intensive because the database isn't as intensive as what NMP is able to report on. But we do report on preterm births, miscarriages. We had 2 in the last year. The maternal outcomes, no subsequent pregnancies 6 months out, and 4 at 12 months, but all were planned. Child outcomes, 87% initiated breastfeeding. This is actually a really good number. For the clients that we work with, typically you don't see these kinds of numbers. And this is because the nurses are in the home and providing education and support. They know who to call when there's problems, and we can come out and help them if they have issues. And then again, the ASQ, everybody has been screened. We've had 5 referred out for further evaluation, and 2 are receiving additional resources at this point. I think that's yours.
And NFP started with the health department in 2012. I think off the top of my head, I think we had 22 graduations last year. I'm not sure. I know it's in the 20s. So we do have some graduations. Some do stick it out to the whole program. So these are our current stats. We have 6 nurse home visitors. 3 are currently building up their caseloads, and 3 are maintaining their caseloads. So as some drop off, then they have to find new referrals, or as the clients graduate, then they have to get new clients as well. The nurses usually have a caseload of around 22 clients each, but they can go up to 25. And we have served 444 families since NFP began in 2012. The next couple slides are the NFP outcomes for pregnancy, mom, and child. For pregnancy, the nurse emphasizes the importance of doctor visits, healthy habits to decrease chances of preterm labor, and low birth weight. They also emphasize on when the mom should or should not go to the doctor. They talk about the signs and symptoms of preterm labor. From May of last year through April of this year, 89% of the babies in NFP were full term, had normal birth weight, and did not have to go to the NICU. So that's very significant. For the maternal outcomes, we educate on the importance of social, emotional, mental, and physical health. We also discuss family planning and self-sufficiency with the moms. The number of moms enrolled in state aid significantly decreased from the beginning of the program to the ending of our program at 24 months postpartum. And then for some of the child outcomes, it's very important that the mothers take care of themselves so that they're able to take care of their baby. So we talk a lot about self-care, and then here, these are the stats for the children. As mentioned before, ASQs are very important because they have to determine if interventions are needed and different referrals or resources are needed before the children enter school. Here are some pictures of our plan event, which is our parent-led activity network. We usually do one a month, and it's for the families to come out and help and socialize and meet other parents, meet other families, and do fun activities with their children. We also have two main events a year. Our major event is the Santa event that we hold at Lowe's, and it's Lowe's is able to give us money back. The money that we raise there, Lowe's donates like safety supplies and stuff like that.
Baby gates and things like that.
Or plants. This is the last slide. Any questions?
So you've been to the, or you go, guys go up to like the OB units and they have all your information?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, we've made the ground to the OB units, to the OB doctors, to the pediatricians.
Because I've sometimes been up on the OB floor and they're like, we really need somebody watching this kid. And I'm like, yeah, call the health department.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And unfortunately, some of those ladies won't engage, but some do. Mm-hmm. And so we've been getting more referrals from the hospitals. We have to keep going, though, to remind the nurses that we're still there. And we do. We've been getting there about every 6 weeks.
Okay.
Kind of making the rounds and, hey, here we are again. Here's some brochures. Don't forget about us.
Maybe the Pete's Neal meeting and talk to the NNPs of the...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that would be good.
Because that's a good reminder for the pediatricians.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Talk to Katie O'Malina.
Who?
Katie O'Malina.
And is it Aurora?
Yes, she's the lead NNP.
Okay.
Lori and Brianna, of the education topics that the clients self-select,
mm-hmm.
what's the number one topic that is of interest to them that you spend the most time?
I don't know. I think it varies.
Depending
at what stage they're at.
Yeah.
So they have like a menu they can choose from,
mm-hmm.
from the different areas, and then depending on what they'll choose, they make like this little goal sheet with the nurse on what they're going to do, what's their goal going to be for next time, and then they'll write down what they're going to talk about next time. And then the nurse will bring what they call facilitators, which are the forms that have information on them, and they'll educate them on different topics. And sometimes they do bring stuff in their bag, like additional resources, because sometimes you walk in and there's all kinds of stuff going on. So they try to carry different resources with them just in case something does pop up. You know, maybe a safety plan might be needed that day for something that happened out of the blue and they didn't know until they walked into that home.
Curious as to what you found that the clients, the most needs of what they were asking to receive information on, that seems to be the topic that you're usually repeating.
I think for our clients, postpartum anyways, it's child development. They want to know what they can do to support their babies. And I didn't mention this, but one thing that we do that's a PAT thing is we try to bring a book out each visit that we leave with the family. So they're usually getting at least one, if not two books a month that's appropriate for that child. And big push on reading to the baby. In fact, even reading to the belly when they're pregnant is a way to bond with the baby. So, but you know, they're just as interested in development as any other parent is. They just don't always have all the resources that someone has to do.
I
And I would love to have the two of you engage with the Smart Beginnings Action Network, because we're looking at those high impact strategies so that more of our little ones are ready to learn.
Yeah.
We're hearing the same things from our families too when we're out there hosting community conversations. They're inundated with a lot of information, and so we have to break that noise, and that's why our focus this year is the ASQ. By no means is it the best thing ever, but it's something.
It's easy to do,
and it's parent-led, because we believe our parents are our child's first and best teachers for life. And so we really would love to have you guys at the table when we go on to different strategies.
Yeah.
Okay, we can't sell it enough.
Yeah,
but that alignment part is so important.
I've had six weeks for working my master's, and I'm almost done.
Oh, well, congratulations on that.
It's taking one of my days away.
And Lynn's a great facilitator, so I'm not even up in front of the room anymore. She's taking it to the next level.
Yes.
I'm Bridget Cardinelli, a school nurse team lead for our school nurses. So we reap the benefits of all your hard work with all these youngins before they hit elementary school. So in a nutshell, the National Association of School Nursing has built a very nice framework to explain what school nursing looks like today. It has evolved quite a bit over several years. So in the center, you see the students. The model shows that it's student-centered. Surrounding them with their school community, the families around that, the overlapping keys, those principles are care coordinator, leadership, quality improvement, and the community and public health to help support those students. And it is circled by standards of practice, obviously, which is the foundation for evidence-based and clinically centered quality care. This is a representation of what school nursing looks like for the school district that we serve, which is Kenosha Unified School District. There are 4.8 school nurses represented by the stethoscopes and 37 schools. And inside those 37 schools, there's 16,000 plus students. So I hope that sounds overwhelming, but we're actually very good at what we do. So. And we are able to accomplish that through individual health care plans, which are a written plan where the school nurse sits down with the parents, students and the teachers to determine what that student needs to navigate their day. If they have asthma, do they need to stop in the office before gym class, or is it only as needed? Students who are self-cathing, when do they need to come down and who's checking in on them? Medications that are scheduled, that kind of thing, to make sure that they understand how to ask for what they need during the day and that they can ask for what they need. Medication administration, we're looking at the medications that are coming in or making phone calls home to encourage the parent maybe to send medication if they have chronic migraines so that they can attend school more often or more comfortably. Staff education, obviously with 37 schools, we can't be in each one all the time, so we use our staff, KUSD staff, the teachers, the secretaries, even the principals will jump in and help students. And so we're the consultant for that staff when any episode maybe comes up that they're not quite sure how to handle. They're able to call us and so that we can walk them through a situation. Student education, empowering those students when they come in to take their inhalers, watching how they're taking it, do they need to maybe tweak their technique, and encouraging them to stand up for themselves. If they walk into a busy office and they're not breathing very well and they're going to politely wait until somebody notices them, when they finally do come up, and then educating them, you know, your breathing comes first. Definitely walk up, interrupt an adult conversation, you have that right to breathe. So empowering students when they seem to need something, but they're not quite sure how to ask. So that's what our school nurses are doing every day. And then obviously, couldn't do it without our external resources, whether it's within the health department or all the resources in the community that we're referring our families and our students to. Probably should mention, since this is something we seem to think about every day, but safety and emergency response. Unfortunately, we're reminded way too often of this. But all the school nurses participated in ALICE training, which ALICE training stands for, alert is the A, lockdown, inform, contain, and escape. So it's, the students were trained on what this looks like. The staff were actually trained in a mock emergency so that we kind of tell how we would respond to that. So all the school nurses participated in that, and There are many safety devices around every school that are in place if there ever was an intruder. Then it also makes us think when we're doing our health plans and coordinating with these students, if they're ever not in the place they're supposed to be when all this happens, they don't have their supplies with them. So making sure that in our care plans that we're thinking about evacuations as well. Does there need to be glucose tabs kept in art, music, and gym also because they might be there as well? So safety and emergency response. We go through the medical supplies every year to make sure that their bags are fully stocked. A lighter note, quality improvement, always thinking of what can be better. We've been focusing on asthma for a couple of years now, and unfortunately we haven't been able to make that number budge, that 36%. So 9.8% is the number of students that have asthma, reported asthma in Kenosha Unified. 36% of those students come prepared with a rescue inhaler, which does kind of concern us because that's a large percentage of students that don't have a rescue inhaler. So we send letters home, we call parents when kids come in that are having trouble. We're always trying to communicate with the parents the importance of having a rescue inhaler. Anytime we have to call 911 because of asthma, the child can't come back unless they have an inhaler. So we're not quite sure what isn't helping those numbers budge. I'm just hoping that maybe it would have gone down if we weren't trying so hard. And then the other quality improvement is vision screening. We screen second and fifth graders routinely throughout the year, and usually send them a letter, refer them to the physician. We don't get feedback all the time. So this year is the first year that we tried to figure out who is going to the doctor. Is this benefiting them? And so 19% of the students that we referred actually confirmed that they did get glasses. I feel like that number is low, but it was 80 kids that would maybe have otherwise been noticed that they needed glasses. So 80 students were confirmed to have glasses. And hopefully all the rest just didn't tell us that they got glasses. That's our school nursing in a very brief nutshell, just the highlights. So any additional information?
Just a comment. I know that when my son needed a rescue inhaler, my insurance will only pay for one inhaler. And so if you have an insurance company that says you only get one, you know, the idea of having one and leaving it at school is literally not going to happen.
And we do and work with families on that. They can mark, right. They can carry their inhaler with them.
Right.
So we even have kindergartners that will have it with them, but everybody knows they obviously can't use it on their own, but that's right. The one needed for at home and at school. And usually, some insurance companies will make you wait 60 days to get that second inhaler. So we'll kind of send home that friendly reminder about 4 months later to say, are we able to get one now? So once winter hits or in the spring when they're doing and also in gym class, they do endurance testing throughout the year, so that phaser test, so all of them, I mean, okay, so we'll send home friendly reminders that, you know, the child who sat on the couch all year, they have a phaser test coming.
It's just a fact of, you know, if your
insurance
doesn't do it, you know,
it's really hard to get that number to move.
One of the issues I see with the vision is that we have a fair number that don't have insurance, so they don't get their glasses, or they don't get them fixed.
Mm-hmm. Or they've broken them, they've already used up all their insurance.
Or the kid loses them at school and doesn't tell the parent because they don't need them for school.
Right. Thank you.
Lions Club does provide glasses, though. If you have people.
Is it only one per year?
I don't know.
Okay.
But they will provide them.
We do send resources for Vision USA and Lions Club. Vision USA covers the exam. Lions Club covers the glasses.
Thank you.
Just a couple brief updates. Our camp trainings still go on. Our environmental health team is starting with their license renewals. And then some ins and outs. We have two new staff, Atifa, you met, is one. And then we also have a communicable disease clinical services team leader is our second. And then we've lost some staff. Two have moved. One, she had to follow her fiancé.
I know.
Happens.
Happy for her. It's Florida.
I know. Another one followed their college student to, I think, Tennessee. We have the retirement that Pam announced. Wonderful for her. We do have two that are on medical leave, accident and sickness. One of those has been for 6 months, so we're hoping she comes back very soon. And then the last is chose a job closer to her home, and her home is in Green Bay. So she traveled 3 hours to get to us. So the adjustment, I'm sure her family appreciates that. And that's it.
Any other comments from anyone?
I think we can adjourn.
We'll adjourn.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, thank you. She loved it.